three, two, one. All right, folks. I told you about this. I promised this. I gave you little teasers ahead of time. Well, it's finally happened. This is the Brewcast.
The Brewcast is an experimental audio collaboration between Raging Chicken Radio and Phoenix Biotech Brews. It's the Brewcast.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. The Brewcast is the brainchild of Matthew Beniak. Matthew is a home brewer. He's also a high school science teacher. And I think you're going to get some of the science angle on the brewing process here. This is, you know, the cool thing about working in this podcast format is that we can try to do some, you know, some experiments with format and try out some new stuff. And so this is going to be a little kind of temporary series. It's almost like kind of like a Netflix, you know, binge session, right? We're going to follow the brewing process as Matthew is going to give us a little background about what got him into this podcast and so on, or why he wanted to kind of pursue this. But we're going to follow the brewing process from the kind of conception to the bottling and, of course, to the drinking. So first of all, Matthew, welcome to the Brewcast. I don't know what the hell we're doing here, but all I know is I'm as excited as all hell, and this is going to be fun.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, again, when I first, you know, you kind of first floated this idea about doing a podcast of following the brewing process, I mean, what sparked your interest in this? Why did you want us to do a podcast that followed the brewing process?
Well, there's a lot of brewcasts out there, and most of them are from, I don't know if they're all amateur, but most of them are a little more commercial. A lot of the little independent breweries that are doing brewcasts and things like that. And I'm not really a professional brewer in the least bit. And I don't know. I thought it was just interesting. And I know that some people have an affinity for beer, mainly you. And I thought you might want to hear a little more about how it's made.
I think it's awesome. It's kind of like, you know, the ground up version of the brewing process is super. And, you know, in full disclosure, I work with Matthew's wife, and I get to hear that, you know, on certain days I get to hear, you know, there's something bubbling beneath my counter in my kitchen. So he's got something cooking up. So, all right. So we've got this, you know, I mean, I think that's a great way of kind of approaching it. And I've done the same thing as you have. I've gone through listening to different podcasts about the brewing process and all this kind of stuff. And my frustration with it, with some of those podcasts has been, one, either that, you know, it's this, you know, it's professional insider stuff, looking particular breweries and stuff, which is interesting, don't get me wrong, which is kind of interesting. It's got the professional tinge to it. Or, you know, it can get really snobbish too as well, where you get people, and the whole point of the thing is just to kind of, you know, as the enlightened consumer, whether this is good or bad, and do I say this is awesome or not, and you talk about all this stuff, as opposed to actually getting involved with that kind of hands-on production process. So, you know, I think it's just because it's a really cool idea. So, as the background, you know, you're getting ready to brew a batch of beer. My understanding is that the beer that you're getting ready to brew right now is an original recipe, and this is the your third one. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The first one that I made was a blueberry ale, and it turned out horrible. It happens. It's a learning process. And the second one that I did, though, I took a Irish red and an amber ale, and I mixed the recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually came out very well. But originally, when I tried that, I belonged to a brew club that would send you recipes and the ingredients. And at one point, they were only enough to make 2 gallons. So what I did was I had an amber ale and an Irish red that they sent me. And I mixed them together and it came out really good. So I thought, well, that would be great if I could find out what that recipe was. But unfortunately, the company shut down that was sending the those kits out. And I had to, I think they were called Brew Crate. I'm not quite sure, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And so what I had to do was research the recipes for an Irish red and an amber ale and see what could cross over and what would interfere with what and kind of cut the ingredients down to make my own batch. So I guess it wasn't truly my own recipe, but it was inspired.
It was kind of like steps in the direction, right? Steps in the direction of going completely hands-free on the bicycle, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember that beer too. I mean, you gave me some of that beer and it was fantastic. I mean, that one was absolutely fantastic. And you've also brewed some Belgians before, right? You've also brewed some, I mean, you know, maybe they're not your own recipes, but you've been kind of experimenting with a wide range of beers.
I've made a couple of IPAs and a Russian Imperial Stout, but most of them are from recipes from, brew craft stores.
Mm-hmm. So you got any particular favorites? Like if you had to sit down and kind of drink a beer, what's your go-to?
Oh God. Well, it depends what I'm in the mood for. I do like Saisons.
Uh-huh.
And I like real sour beers, but I also like porters and stouts. So I think though I would have to go with Delirium Nocturnum as one of my favorites.
Oh, that's a fantastic beer. That's a great beer. Well, good. It gives you a little kind of angle on it. Also gives me a sense of kind of, you know, when I really need to trade beer with you, which ones I'm going to get for you. All right. So walk me through this then too. You know, here you are, you're a science teacher, right? And now you're brewing beer, right? And I think that's kind of a cool connection number one, right? So you got the, you know, you're coming at it from a kind of a science perspective on it too as well. Or at least you have that as a perspective, you know, which you view the world through in some ways. What got you into, you know, brewing your own beer? I mean,
it wasn't my idea initially. A friend of mine started to brew beer and he said, why don't you come up and you can help me out with some of the process. So, you know, I sat down, I was, you know, working with him, and it takes a good amount of time, you know, 3 or 4 hours, depending on, you know, what you're brewing, and a lot of cleaning. Lots and lots of cleaning. We sat down and we worked through it. And then, you know, I asked him a couple of questions as we were going through it. And then he decided to be basically the Jedi master to me being the Padawan of beer. And he kind of helped me through brewing. You know, he came back down to my house. We got a setup and went through a recipe or two with him. And he has since not brewed a whole lot. But I've started picking up the slack for that. And every time you brew, you learn something new. Whether by mistake or by research.
All right, did you come at this? I mean, were you a big beer drinker ahead of time? Did you really like beer and as part of your way in?
Well, yeah, but I wasn't always a beer drinker. I mean, this was only about, I guess, maybe 10 years ago that the same guy introduced me to beer because I was used to, you know, the Coors Lights of the world and, you know, MGD, which is still a good beer, but not in the area of like, you know, Three Philosophers or, you know, something like that. But he introduced me to beer in general and the different types that were out there. And after, you know, getting a good palate and sense of what I liked to drink from there, then I just got into the brewing aspect. It's I don't know, it's very similar to chemistry. You know, there's a lot of baking aspects to it and cooking aspects to it as well. Depends on what part of the brew you're looking at, but it's a lot of fun. It's kind of relaxing and it's a little bit cheaper when you're trying to get, you know, a good Belgian and, you know, you don't want to pay a huge amount of money for it and you get to make your own stuff, which is nice.
No, that's cool. So you find that, you know, you're approaching it as, you know, from that science perspective. I mean, you already said, you know, there's some similarities there. Do you actually, you know, see yourself as kind of like the beer scientist as you're putting this stuff together?
Well, I don't know if I'd go into it that much. I know what the steps do.
Mm-hmm.
Could I go in and look at the actual chemistry behind it? Yeah, I could do that. But I don't know if it's entirely looking at the chemistry and the biology behind the yeast and the way that they work there's lots of calculations. If you want to really get into the nitty gritty of brewing your own beer, and you want to take a look at, well, if the starting temperature of what I have is this temperature, how much boiling water do I have to add to get it to the next temperature that I want? And there's a lot of math that you can do if you want. But the way that most of the things are set up, a lot of the recipes, mm-hmm. you just add them according to time and temperature that they have already figured out. So even when you're making your own recipe, you can kind of estimate amounts and things like that. Like, you know, 12 pounds of grains, you know, you go 12, 11, 13, depending on what you're adding. It's not going to make that much of a difference. And one thing I want to stress is that I do not know everything about brewing. I am still learning. You know, I've brewed maybe, I don't know, 15 different beers by now, mm-hmm. but still learning every time you do something.
Well, I think that's, I mean, for me, that's, you know, what completely sold me on doing this podcast too, is that, you know, you're not coming at this as, you know, the expert. You're not trying to say, you know, here's everything I know about beer, but it's, you know, that hands-on look. You know, I'm the kind of person, I learn by doing. I learn by getting my hands dirty. I learn by, you know, and again, both actually physically dirty hands, but also kind of metaphorically, you know, even when we're, you know, sitting here with this podcast, right? You know, I was not the podcast master by any stretch of the imagination. I didn't spend, you know, all my time learning it from the ground up. I spent years doing some stuff in college radio. I absolutely loved radio. When the whole podcast, the whole podcast format began emerging, I thought it was kind of really cool. But it wasn't until the past, you know, kind of year or so that I really said, okay, let me see if kind of going to jump in and do this. And I like that whole kind of approach because I find it, you know, one, it's accessible to people. So they're not feeling have to kind of enter into the brewing process from, you know, hearing about this person that is going to tell them all the absolute correct ways to do it. But there is that element of surprise, right? That element of this could go horribly wrong, right?
Yep. Seen that happen a couple of times. There's a really interesting thing that happens once that the beer starts fermenting. It can blow the top off your carboy. If you get a little too much gas being expelled there, which didn't happen to me, but did happen to the friend of mine. And there's a little bit of cleaning up to do.
Yeah. Have you had any major disasters?
No, I don't think I've ever had major disaster. I've had bad beers. I've made a couple of bad beers that I was not happy with, that blueberry being the...
Was that the worst?
Bottom. Oh, it was horrible. It was totally, totally horrible. But once I made it and I found out what I did wrong, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense from a scientific standpoint. if you boil things instead of heating them up before boiling, it changes what you do to the yeasts and the sugars that are inside of them. So if you use fresh blueberries, you don't want to boil them until the second part. You know, you want to get the sugar out of them. You want to get everything moving. And then you want to heat them up to get rid of the stuff that's growing in them. So that's one of the things that I've learned about the step process of heating up the mash.
Oh, so learning by doing. You know, I can remember a friend of mine when I was in grad school, Rich, he started brewing his own beer and he produced a couple cases of absolutely horrible beer, right? But he did some really great stuff too as well. Like, I remember he had a party at his house one night and he had this special batch that he came out that was really good that he put in the refrigerator and he put a sign on it, said, you know, do not drink this, right? Do not drink this. And he reserved it, you know, for his close friends. So he, you know, gave me one and other people. And then throughout the night, it turns out there was this one woman who came to the party. He didn't know very well, but she was going in the refrigerator and trying to pilfer the beer, right? So what he did is he went downstairs and he grabbed about a six pack or so of that really bad beer, which he said is good for nothing except for an X-lax replacement. Stuffed it in the refrigerator and watched her for the next half an hour drink that horrible beer.
Oh.
So I was like, Rich, that was awful. I said, look, he's like, I had a sign. There was a sign. She didn't listen. So anyways, what you could do. So, all right. So in the second segment of today, that we're going to, you know, for folks listening to this, Matthew's going to kind of walk you through a little bit, about the process, what he's about getting ready to do. He's going to tell us a little bit about the beer he's going to brew and what he's, getting ready to do in terms of the setup and so on. But if we kind of back up and look at the big picture of, this little mini podcast here, Matthew, so walk us through kind of what you envision happening over the span of the next several weeks.
Okay. Well, the first part of it is, of course, the brewing. And the biggest issue that you will see listed in pretty much every recipe is about making sure that everything is sterile. And you get one bad bacteria in there, and there's basically what you do when you're making beer is you just heat up a lot of food for the yeast to eat. And if you get a bacteria in there, bacterium in there, or any type of bacteria in there, that's just going to go to town on whatever sugars you have sitting around in there. So you have to make sure that everything's as clean as possible and sterile. And once you get to that point, then there's a good, it takes about 3 hours, but it's only about 90 minutes of heating the substances that you need to do to pull all the stuff out of the grains that you have, cooling it down. And then you start the fermentation process when you add the yeast. And then the yeast will sit for about 10 days, maybe a little longer. The beer that I'm going to try and make should have a very heavy quality to it and should take a good 10 to 14 days to completely ferment. And then you take it, put in a secondary fermenter, let it sit for another couple of days, and then you bottle it, and when you bottle it, you usually add in a little more sugar to get the carbonation. Some people use CO2 to carbonate it as they put it in instead of relying on the yeast to carbonate it as well. And then I'm going to let this one sit for a couple of months because it's a Belgian strong ale. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully after that couple of months, we'll open up a bottle and hopefully it'll be good.
That's awesome. This is all the big fingers crossed, right?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. So we're gonna go to a break. And when we come back from the break, we're gonna have Matthew lay us out. He's talking about this Belgian strong ale. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, you're sitting here, you're getting ready to go into that brewing process. What's, you know, what do you got in front of you? What's that first step gonna look like? And what are you hoping that's gonna come out of it? So we'll be back right after this break with Matthew Bieniek, and this is the Brewcast, man, on Raging Chicken Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Welcome back to the Brewcast, all. I'm here once again, and my fellow guinea pig, right? We're kind of mutual guinea pigs in this process. Kind of looking at the kind of home brewing process, and I'm here with Matthew Bieniek, and I should say that, you know, he's got his own beer label, right? So, and from what I understand, he's going to have to be start printing labels now too, as well. It's become part of the upscale, you know, because you're upping your production process, right?
Well, actually, the label came from the fact that I started brewing beer and putting them in bottles and couldn't remember what was in what bottle. So That's the necessity for the labels.
Got that? Pro tip, folks. Pro tip. All right. And so he calls his beers Phoenix Biotech Brews, right? And you can actually follow him on Untappd. You can check out there every time he has a beer that comes out, he'll kind of post it up there if you want to see some of the beers that that he's drinking too as well. Check him out there on Untappd. It's kind of pretty cool. And as a reminder, so Matthew is also, he's a science teacher, right? So you're going to hear some of that kind of science talk throughout this process, which is also awesome. But let's get to the point like of square one, right? You're sitting here, you're getting ready to brew this Belgian strong ale. Like, first of all, what is that, right? What is the Belgian strong ale, and what do you need to make this thing?
Well, a Belgian strong ale is usually something that is a little higher in octane than most other beers. I'm looking to make a strong dark Belgian, a little spicy, kind of like it's kind of like Mad Elf. Actually, it's more like Fegley's Rude Elf Reserve, which I think
Rude Elf Reserve. Okay,
it's a little smoother than the Mad Elf, but same kind of idea with the Belgian strong ale. So it's a Belgian.
So it's got a kind of dark. It's got more of a. It's got more of like a fall wintry feel to it, or yes. Is it a little bit? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely more of a winter beer, but it has to sit for a couple of months. So the plan is to get it started now, and let it sit until everything kind of matures taste wise inside of it. And generally, the grains that you use for this are ones that you're going to want to get some different kind of flavors out of them, especially like a little bit of a chocolate taste to it. One of the things that I learned while, you know, looking at different recipes for different Belgians that were out there and finding out what grains they kind of used and then researching what taste is that grain going to give you, I found out that every step in the process, from how you heat the beer to what hops you use to what yeast you use to what spices you put in at the end, every single one of those can change different parts of the beer, whether it's, you know, the aroma or the bitterness or the head of the beer even. So I decided to go with a couple of different types of actual grains. And the first part of brewing is called the mashing, and this is when you take the grains and you put them in warmer water and heat them up to get all of the material out that you want the yeast to eat. And the thing that I just learned about this is the secret to a Belgian beer is about the step heating through the mashing. So there's a couple of different steps that you want to do. The first one is called the protein rest. And you usually do this at about 125 degrees Celsius, Fahrenheit, Jesus, Celsius.
No, I was going to say, so what does that do? So you're heating this up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit, you said?
Yeah, 125 degrees. What it does is it breaks down some of the proteins, and it makes the starches inside the grain more accessible to the next part. But the key to breaking down the proteins is that actually releases a lot of different amino acids that the yeast can pick up and use along with the sugars that come into the next phase. So the proteins inside the grains, you know, a lot of people talk about like gluten in grains, different proteins that are in there. You want to break them apart and take the starches. Starches are really, really long chains, and you want to break them down because once you break down the starches, they break off into sugars, and the sugars are what the yeasts want.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So, you know, you said around like 125 degrees. So how exact does that need to be? Right. I mean, so if you're going 2 degrees one way or another, or 5 degrees one way or another, and how much is that going to affect this process?
Not so much in this process. Well, there's a range.
Okay.
From like 120 to 130 degrees Fahrenheit. But in the next phase that you get into, 3 or 4 degrees difference makes the difference between what type of enzymes you're allowing to survive.
Okay.
So some of the proteins that are already inside the sugars are enzymes, and these enzymes can break down certain types of sugars, and specifically like amylase, that breaks down the sugar amylose. There are two different types. There's an alpha form and a beta form. And in the second step, called the saccharification, it's like saccharin. It's when you're pulling, you're taking the starches that are in the grain and turning them into sugars. During this phase, if you change the temperature from like 150 degrees Fahrenheit to 155 degrees Fahrenheit, it'll change which form of amylase you're allowing to work the best. And then that'll change the flavor of the beer. What that is specifically, I don't know off the top of my head. Most of it is, you know, you can look that up and find out, you know, which one does what. But the neat part about that particular step where you're taking the starches and turning them into sugars is you can use one of the tests that you learn in your basic bio classes where you take iodine to identify starch. So if you add the iodine to this step and you still have a lot of starch in your wort, in your mash, it's not wort yet, it'll turn a bluish blackish color. But if you've got most of the starch out and you have a lot of sugars in there, then it'll stay the iodine-y, like, you know, brownish, reddish, yellowish color.
How cool is that? So, okay, so then, do I get this right then? So if you're talking about, you know, you're talking about that temperature variation. So if we've got, I know we're kind of getting a little ahead of the things here, but sorry about that. But it just kind of, now my head is going on this. So you could essentially be, start with the same ingredients and then alter the taste depending on kind of what you do with the temperature at that second phase then.
Yeah, you can alter the taste, and a lot of it alters the lacing that you get from the head of the beer. So if most like American ales, they don't do a stepped mash. They just do it at one particular temperature, usually like, I don't know, 160, 170. And then after that, when they pull the grains out, then they add in the rest of the malts that they have and the sugars and the hops and the, and then go from there. But the Belgian process likes to use, or actually almost all European brews like to do a step mash. Mm-hmm. As far as I know. No, as far as cool. I know. Like I said, don't know it all.
All right. So then you got this mash, right? You've got this mash, and then you're kind of you're getting the, I'm writing this stuff down, see? so your idea is to kind of you're getting all the stuff out of the grains that you want the yeast to eat, right? You're breaking down your starches, right? You're releasing these enzymes, and then your temperature has something to do with which enzymes survive to kind of influence the taste of the beer from, you know, this completely non-scientific mind of mine. Right, it's kind of how is that kind of the gist of what you're of what we're talking about?
That's pretty much it. It changes the shape of the sugars and changes shape of the molecule. It changes the way it works.
Okay, great. So you're here, you're mashing this stuff up, right? You know, I know butchering the official language of brewing here, and that's
no mashing is exactly it.
Oh, well, there you have it. You're mashing it up. You're getting all this stuff to release, and then what happens from here?
Once you get it to the point where your grains have, you've extracted all the things out of the grains that you want, you do not want to raise the temperature to boiling with the hard grains in the pot.
Okay.
Because then it releases tannins, and that's what gives you like an off taste to your beer. And so at this point, you pull the grains out of the pot and you let them drain. One of the things I found out is you don't want to take the grains are usually in like a it's kind of like a cheesecloth or a mustard bag, and you let everything drain out of them, but you don't want to squeeze them to get all the rest of the stuff out of there, because that gets the harsh tannins and a lot of the other starches that haven't completely broken down. So you just want to lift that bag out and let it drip down. Sometimes they do a process called sparging, which it just means sprinkling. And you may pour some extra water over the grains just to get out whatever's kind of sticking to them. But you don't want to like squeeze them or wring them out or anything like that. And then once you get to this point, you start heating it up to a boil to get rid of to get rid of any of the organisms that are in there, any bacteria that could have been on the grain. And you heat it up, and now you have, you're starting what's called the wort, and you start adding your hops. And generally, there's three stages of hops as well. The first stage is what's called your bittering hops. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing an IPA, you do a lot of bittering hops. But every beer needs bittering hops in it because you have so much sugar that you're just taking out of all of those, all the grains that you had there. So you definitely, every beer needs to have some amount of bittering hops that are in there. The amount of hops and the type of hops that you add change the flavor at this point, or change the bittering. The second amount of hops, which is about halfway through the boiling, is called your flavoring hops. And that's the hoppiness that you get inside the beer. And again, IPAs, lots of hops. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, in the last like 10 minutes of the boil, you add what are called the aromatic hops, which give the help to give the beer a particular aroma. And different hops have different flavors. And I don't know much about specific types of hops other than the ones I've researched.
So which ones are we going to get through through the process that we're looking at here with the strong ale?
I'm using the Magnum hops for the bittering and the flavoring, and I'm using Sterling hops for the aroma.
Any particular reason why? Why these hops?
They're generally the ones that are used in Belgians, and I've tracked them down into a bunch of different beers that I liked, and they were the hops that they used. So I'm going to say, well, let's give those a shot.
Let's give it a whirl. All right, so we've got it. So we're all hopped up. We've mashed. We've hopped. What do we do next?
After you heat this up, as you go through the boil, you add the hops in, and about halfway, I completely forgot. There's a stage right after the boiling that you've added in the mash that you have to add in. If you have like sugars or you have dry extract, you can get, there's different ways to brew. You can use whole grain, you can use ground grain, or you can use extracts, which is where they've taken the grain and extracted the materials that you're going to need, the malt extract that you want for the beer. The malt extracts don't have to be in the mashing part because they're already extracted. So once you do the extractions, then you can add in what they call, you know, light malt extract or dark malt extract. And you let that sit. And somewhere near the end is where you add your flavorings. If you wanted to add any spices like clove or cinnamon or vanilla, usually they're within the last like 10 minutes of the boiling part, because it's really surprising how you can add something in and it's only a little bit and it flavors 5 gallons of beer. So you got to be careful, you know, what you're adding. I did make the mistake of making a cinnamon apple cider, which was an apple cinnamon cider more than it was apple. There was too much cinnamon in it. You live, you learn. And we adjusted that. So the last 10 minutes of this one, I'm going to be adding some vanilla beans, some cloves, cinnamon sticks, and then you let it cool down. It's best to cool it down quickly and covered, because you don't want to let hot liquid with all that sugar in it sit with without a lid on it. You can get anything that's in the air can fall in there. In fact, one of the Belgian breweries, I think it's when they make their lambics, they have a roof that they just open up in the building and they let the natural yeast fall in. And that's how they put yeast into their beer, which I don't think I want to do that around here. So I don't know what's in the air. So you let it cool down. There's a really interesting device that they have, a round section of copper tubing that's just been spun in a coil. And you can hook it up to a garden hose and run water through it. And you dip that entire copper thing into the wort, and it cools it down pretty quickly. And once you get it cooled down to a certain temperature, then you can add the yeast, and you put it in a carboy and let it sit.
So the yeast is just then, you're not even, the yeast is not, it has to be all, everything has to be completely cooled down before the yeast even touches the liquid.
Well, if you added the yeast in at a, when, you know, it's cooled down after a boil and it's still at like 178 degrees Fahrenheit, you'll kill all the yeast.
You're going to kill the yeast.
Yeah. So you have to wait till it cools down. I mean, you don't, when I say cool down, I'm still talking, you know, like 80 degrees Fahrenheit. It's okay. Still warm.
Not cold, but so
it's but warm. It's not cold. Yeah.
Right. So just like if you're baking bread, you want to make sure that, you know, you're adding it to warm water, right? Not cold water and not hot water.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Using that baking metaphor again too as well. So good. Well, I already, frankly, you know, you got my mouth watering when you're talking about the cloves and those are my absolute favorite kind of flavors. I love the winter beers. I love stouts too as well, but I love the winter beers. I love that kind of, those rich, you know, all those winter spices, all the crap you get at Christmas. That's in my beer. I'm happy. You know, when you said the Rudolph stuff, I find those beers fantastic. So it's going to be kind of interesting to come out. So what do you have an expectation? You said you want it to be kind of like Rudolph, or is going to be in that family, so to speak. How are you expecting this to taste, right? I mean, it's going to be like that, but it's not going to be exactly like that, right?
Well, I'm hoping. yeah, it should be in the that family of spice winter ales is what I'm looking for. So, you know, and there's tons of them that are out there. I just made last year I made a winter warmer ale. I still wasn't really happy with that. That wasn't my recipe. It was just a recipe from a company. And I don't know if it was the yeast or what combination that was in there, but there's just a little bit of an aftertaste that I didn't care for. You know, other people said it was fine, but it was, you know, not one of my favorites. And I'm learning to, the good thing about having this chemistry background, whenever you do an experiment, you write down everything that you did. So the next time you can go back and say, oh, don't want to do that. Need to change this. So, you know, I think you were telling me about one of your friends who brewed, and he brewed this great beer, and then he didn't have a recipe for it.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I've known people who've cooked and baked kind of like this too as well. But, you know, I mean, because as you were telling me, is like, you know, beer making is much more akin to baking, right? And my wife tells me all the time, like, you know, look, baking is not like cooking. You got to follow the recipe, right? Because, you know, I love to cook, right? But cooking is not baking. I'm a horrible baker, right? But I love to cook. But this guy, yeah, he had this knack for it, you know, and again, I shouldn't say it's just like a knack. I think that's just the way his mind worked. Right. I mean, he just kind of remembered all this stuff, and he was, he had been brewing long enough where, he would kind of try out these different recipes, but he wouldn't really write all this stuff down. So they're kind of, everything was one and done, right? People loved it. Well, I hope you had one, because there is no more and there's no way to get the other one back. So, it was such a nightmare, right?
Yeah, that's not how I work. It's interesting though about the baking and the cooking. The first part of brewing the beer with the mashing and the wort is very much like baking. Mm-hmm. That last 10 minutes when you add stuff in, that's the cooking part, where you get to, you know, what kind of flavor do I want to add in there? Do you want to add cinnamon? Do you want to add, you know, whatever you want to add in? And that last 10 minutes, that's where the cooking part takes over. And you're like, oh, I'm going to add a little more of this or a little more of that, where you get that final flavor in there.
And at that point, I mean, if you're coming up with your own recipe, I assume that, you know, to a certain degree, there's some trial and error involved with that, right?
From my history, yeah, apparently. Yeah. blueberry
beer, not so good. So says the blueberry beer, right?
Yeah. It's like looming over me like a cloud.
Well, you know, you'll always be running from that beer. Just think about it like that. So you can always say, too, the good thing about that, though, is that you've got your marker. You're going to say, hey, at least it's not that blueberry beer. People start to complain too much. You remember that? And everyone goes, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, all right. So we're at the point you got, you're kind of putting the yeast in, and it is, and what happens here? So you were putting the yeast in, you've cooled everything down, you're putting your yeasts in. Walk us through that process.
Well, the yeast The yeast comes in a couple of different forms. You can get a dry yeast, or the ones that I like to use are called Y yeasts. It's W-Y-E-A-S-T. Mm-hmm. And they are packets of yeast that are chilled. You keep them in the fridge till you're ready to use them. And then there's a little starter packet of food inside the container that you kind of pop like one of those ice packs.
Those glow sticks?
Or glow stick, yeah. It reminds me of like the athletic ice packs where you had to crack the thing on the inside and shake it up.
Yeah.
And you let it go for a while so that it starts to reproduce inside this little bag. And then by the time you're ready at the end of the brewing process, when everything's cooled down, then you can pour this yeast with the nutrients right into the wort and get the fermentation started. If you use a dry yeast, sometimes you want to take that dry yeast and give it a starter solution where you put it in some warm water and maybe some sugar, and you let it go just to reproduce itself to make sure that you have a viable yeast, so that you're not throwing yeast in that's dead or it's not growing, and then you're wondering, why isn't my beer, you know, bubbling? But it's kind of neat. Throw the yeast in, you put a cap on the top of it so that, you know, nothing falls into the carboy. I prefer the tubing that comes out into a container of water so that the bubbles will come out into there from, you know, the carbon dioxide being generated. And it's about an hour or so after you've put it in, you kind of wait and you wait, and then you can hear a bloop come out of the container. And just like my wife was talking about with the bubbling underneath the counter, once it gets rolling, it starts bubbling like crazy. And it kind of freaks her out a little bit because she's like, that stuff's alive. I'm like, yeah, that's how we're going to get here.
Yep. It's like, just like those vegetables were alive at one point. The cow was alive at one point. The beer was alive at one point. Oh, cool. And now there's different yeast too that you can use in the process, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What are you using?
I'm going to use it's actually called Belgian strong ale yeast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there are other types of Belgians that use all sorts of different types of yeast. Like if you're going to use a Chimay yeast, which the Chimay company uses, of course.
Sure.
And, but you can use any type of yeast you want. And there's so many of them. And again, changes the flavor profile. So you change the grains, it changes the taste. You change the yeast, it changes the taste. You change the hops, it changes the yeast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's one of these things where, you know, until you got that degree in brewing, or you've done, I don't know, 100 batches of beer to know what yeast is going to do what to what grain. You know, it's just, for me, it's trial and error so far to see what works.
Well, what makes this a Belgian strong ale? As opposed to something, is it the yeast that does that, or is that everything together?
It's pretty much everything together. Mm-hmm. The grains that I picked, the hops that I picked, and yeah, definitely the yeast. But like I was saying, it's just everything together. I mean, I don't think it's one specific thing. There is no one specific thing that says that makes it a Belgian ale.
Well, you know, you can call this science if you want. I'm just going to call it magic. Okay. I think that's a better word for it. It's magic.
Well, let's hope it's good magic and comes out well.
Well, you never know. That's the mystery of it, right? It's like those old Disney movies, you know, when they're just learning how to use the magic. Sometimes, you know, you're trying to create a bowl of food and you end up with an evil duck. I don't know. You do what you can. All right. So then after we get the yeast process, you get all that stuff, and that's going to sit for like about an hour or so. It's going to start bubbling. How long is this thing bubbling in your house?
I like to use what's called a secondary fermenter. Mm-hmm. And that's what you do, is you let it sit for about a week, and you can tell by you can do a couple of different things. You can check what's called the gravity of the beer and do a specific gravity test for the beer until it gets to a certain point, or you can kind of play it literally by ear when you hear that bubbling get to a certain point where you're getting like one bubble a minute or so. Then what I do is I put it into a secondary fermenter. What that does is it clarifies it a little bit. You transfer a lot of the material out, but you leave a lot of the sediment in the bottom of that first container. And then once you put it in the secondary fermenter, you let it sit for a couple more days, maybe even another week. And if there's still enough sugar left in there and the yeast is still kicking around, they'll turn more of the sugar into alcohol as well. So, but mostly it just clarifies it. It, you know, you get out a lot of that sediment. And one of the things about home brews, especially the ones that I've done, almost every bottle has sediment in it. You know, I've had a bunch of professional beers that have the sediment still in the bottle. And you just have to be careful about those. So it's the same kind of thing.
Very cool. All right. So this is the, so does that round out like that first, you know, that first round in the process before we get to the bottling, or is there still more that, that you do at that point?
No, that's pretty much it. Once you get to the secondary fermenter and that stops fermenting, then you're ready for bottling. And the way that you, have to bottle is, you get some what's called priming sugar, and you heat it up in some water, dissolve it, and you pour that into what's called your bottling bucket. So you go from, we've gone from the first fermenter to a secondary fermenter, and now it's going into the bottling bucket, which has a little spigot on the bottom. And you put the sugar in the bottom of that, and then you transfer the wort into the bottling bucket so that sugar can be dispersed throughout the liquid, and then you bottle it. I prefer to use 16-ounce bottles, sometimes bigger, because you can control the sediment a little bit better than that. But bottling 12-ounces just takes forever.
Yeah.
And capping those things is not a lot of fun.
No, definitely not. I could definitely see that. I would not want to be doing that. If I could do it, you know, what's that? What's that? Growlers? Sure, going to do it with growlers.
Some people do that.
Yeah. So, well, let me ask you this then. So then once you have this in a bottle, now this is the, is this the kind of beer that's going to continue to ferment as it's in the bottle?
Well, yeah, because you're going to get a little bit of, you definitely need it to ferment a little bit more so that you can get the carbonation.
And
so what we did before with letting the top on the carboy, you'd let out the carbonation, it would bubble out. You get rid of that carbon dioxide. And now we want to keep the carbonation in there, keep the carbon dioxide in there, so you get that little fizz.
Right, right.
Open that bottle up.
Well, this is very cool. This is very cool. I'm excited for the process. So, okay, so you got this. So this is our setup. Now, there, here's the idea, everybody. So this is, so you kind of got a picture of this, this first process. And, you know, so you take it from, say, where you are today, like to say, you know, what, let me just ask. So do you have a date set for when you're going to start the process, when you actually start putting all these things together?
Probably going to do it in 2 days.
In 2 days. Awesome. So like, okay, so this is going to, you're going to start this in 2 days. So how, from the time you start to the time that you're kind of at the end of that first process, how long are we talking here?
Well, you're talking about 2 weeks.
About a 2 week period.
About 2 weeks.
Pretty cool. So what we're going to, so, okay, I'm just going to let everybody in on the process here. Cause like, you know, again, this is the learn by doing thing. So we're going to be true to that. So we have this kind of idea that, one, now we've kind of got the setup here for this podcast. You've kind of met Matthew a bit and hear a little how he's kind of approaching this. We're working with a Belgian strong ale, and he's going to kind of start this process. And so we're going to kind of check in throughout this process. And ideally, if we can get this to work, ideally, Matthew's going to kind of reduce some kind of recording kind of off the podcast, so to speak, because as he's doing the bottling, right? We're going to see if that's going to work, right? We're going to see, because there's going to, yeah, we're going to give it a shot. And so, you know, for those of you who are listening to this podcast and kind of, you know, right now and want to hear more about the process, just be aware that it's going to be it's going to have a little bit of a different feel than, say, the Out to Coop podcast or the sit down, where we have this kind of this regular timing. So, and so there's something going to be this interview where we're going to be talking back and forth. And there's other times where we're going to be putting up some sound of, you know, kind of Matthew walking through this process. And then we're going to check in periodically. So that's going to depend, right, to some degree on, you know, the time frame of the brewing process. That's what makes this cool. Right. So, yeah. So then, I mean, so then I think so at the very least, right, you know, obviously we'll be back in 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks been between now and when, you know, this moves towards the bottling process. I mean, that's obviously one clear marker, but we'll kind of check in before then too as well to see how things are going. Maybe we could even get the sound of the bubbling. That would be freaking awesome. Right. Not only because it'd be kind of cool to hear, like, you know, on the air, but then I could record it and kind of then play it like in your wife's office. just to freak her out. No, but that's, you know, that'd be cool. No, stuff like that. Just kind of hear that process from the ground up. So, I mean, I'm kind of excited about this. So, you know, here you are, two days from now, you're gonna start this process. Anything you want people to know who are tuning in and listening to this podcast at this point?
I think we've pretty much covered everything about the beer.
I'm very, very excited. I'm very excited. So, okay. So you're worried?
I'm worried. I want this one to turn out well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, hey, it sounds good, right? And we've got magic on our side, so what could go wrong? Famous last words.
Yeah. Well, so, if it does turn out fairly good, we're going to call this the Raging Belgian.
Oh, the Raging Belgium. You got that? You got that Raging Belgium, right? Right there from Binyak Biotech Brews. We're bringing the rage no matter where we are, whether we're doing politics or brewing the beer. That's fantastic. Well, great. So listen, you know, Matthew and I are going to stay in touch, and what I'm going to do for everyone who's listening to this, if you're on our Facebook page, right, Raging Chicken Press, you go to our Facebook page, Raging Chicken Press, or you follow us on Twitter at RC Press on Twitter, or if you go, well, it won't be a great place to post it, but so if you follow us at RC Press that on Twitter, what we're going to do is we're going to let you know, I'm going to let you know, kind of come on when we're about to get to that next podcast, when we're going to broadcast some more, we're going to put up some more sound for you to tune into. So if you don't want to listen to like all the Raging Chicken Radio podcasts, or you just want to tune into this one, I'll also have a tag for you that you can just subscribe to just this one. We talked a little bit about also setting up a feed, like maybe in a kind of in a WordPress blog, so that for those folks who are really just tuned into just the home brewing process, you can focus on that. But if in the meantime, you'll always be able to get this by going to rcpress.podbean.com. Once we start putting these up, again, you'll see it right as the episode will come up. It'll say Brewcast and talk, and it'll give you a little description about what that episode of the Brewcast is about. And this should be kind of a cool process. And as a little bonus, it's like one of the things that if you're listening into this and you've got tips, you've got ideas, you got questions for Matthew, again, you can post them to our Facebook page. You can send them to our Twitter. Even better, use the comment section directly below the episode on the Podbean site. This is one of the bonuses of going to either getting the Podbean app on your phone or going online to rcpress.podbean.com. There's a comment section there right below it. And if you leave comments and questions there, we'll be able to kind of go back and forth a little bit on this. You know, feel free to ask the questions. And if you've got ideas or things that work for you in the past, comments on everything that you hear, please do. We also got word, hopefully that this will be old news by the time you're listening to the end of this particular podcast, but it looks like we're going to be having some original music for this podcast too as well, which I'm very, very psyched about. So I'll let you know all about that on Facebook Live when we got that up and running. So Matthew, any departing thoughts for episode one of the Brewcast?
I'm going to go have a beer.
I am to what are you going to drink? That's how we should end every single one of these things. What are you going to have?
I actually have a Root Elf sitting for me in the refrigerator.
Nice. That's perfect. Well, you know, I just picked up, I don't know if you know, New Belgium Brewery out there in Colorado. Yes. Yeah. Right. Well, they just put, have you seen they put out a new, it's like a sampler pack. It's called Fat Tire and Friends.
Oh.
Yeah. So you don't know it. So that means I have to get it for you. So Fat Tire and Friends is basically what New Belgium did is they took their Fat Tire Ale, which is kind of like, you know, they're like their flagship beer that most people, you know, learn about them through. And they shared it with that recipe for Fat Tire with five other breweries. And they did collaborations. And they basically told these brewers like Allagash. I wish I had it with me right here. Allagash is one of them. I know. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. And they said, surprise us. Right? It's the only thing you got to do. You start with this recipe and surprise us. And so you've got, you know, six different, you've got the original Fat Tire plus five collaborations in these 12 packs that they just released. I just picked one up just yesterday at the Frank's Beer Stein up in Quakertown. They had a bunch of them. And last night I had a, they called it like the fat sour apple ale, right? Which was really great. It was like total summer drinking beer. So that's, I think I'm going to do the same. So I'll have to do a virtual cheers to you, my Fat Tire collaboration to your Rude Elf. All right. So, everybody, thanks for tuning in. This could be a cool process. I hope folks are going to kind of join in with the comments and questions and all that. And we'll see where we go. And everyone, wish Matthew luck as he moves into the brewing process. And let's hope this thing turns out awesome because it's going to be a raging Belgian, dark Belgian ale. raging one. That's it. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney. I am the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and I am a collaborator here with Matthew Bieniek, who is high school science teacher and the founder of Bieniek's Biotech Brews, right? Follow him on Untappd, everybody. All right. I'll talk to you soon, Matthew.
Thank you.
All right. I can't wait. See you later, everybody.
The Brewcast is an experimental audio collaboration between Raging Chicken Radio and Bieniek Biotech Brews.